We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Tar Heels heading on the road this weekend for a big-time Coastal Division matchup against Georgia Tech. We're going to talk about that. We have a roller coaster of an interview coming up. We have Adam's list to talk about as well. But first, all of that pales in comparison to the fact that today is Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Ooh, it's time for another Carolina Insider. Adam, you ready? You ready for this Carolina Insider, Adam?
How did that even get started that Rebecca Black got to join the team?
Adam, take a pull a chair up here. I believe what happened was this, Adam. I don't want you to make a big deal about this, but I was running. I was out exercising.
Right.
And Friday came on while I was running, listening to music.
Okay.
And I think I said, correctly, obviously,
right,
that it was a banger.
Right.
And that it got me juiced up while I was running.
Sure.
And so then I think we just elected to start running it while on Friday.
But it was a baseball song, was it not? Didn't we play it in the baseball era?
Probably.
I
would think we probably did.
I think maybe we did. And so it was a semi-holdover,
yeah.
But not till you realized it's genius as a pump-up song.
Yeah.
Did she officially join the team? And then once she appeared on the pod, that cemented it.
I mean, just go back to pod 100.
Yeah.
The centennial pod.
That's right. I don't think people give enough credit to the fact that Rebecca Black was on the pod.
Yeah.
I feel like we deserve more props for that in terms of career accomplishments.
You know what?
Up there.
I'm going to put in the RB, see you later, big grits right now.
I'm Rebecca Black, and I am wishing you the best weekend you've ever had in your life. See you later, big grits.
I like that.
What a moment.
You know what is?
That was a good... Oh, Adam, come on. Just get your hashtag so classy for Rebecca Black.
Yeah, she handled that well.
Good old glorious pod 100.
Glorious!
Good times. But we're well over pod 200 now, and we've got a busy show. Adam, our interview coming up with Matt Merletti, who we warned you on Tuesday, you're going to go There's no way the Matt Merletti interview is wild. But, Adam, it is.
It's loco.
And not in the fact that, like, Matt Merletti was going crazy or anything. He wasn't trashing Mobile Pod World Headquarters.
He wasn't jumping on the couch.
No. No. He didn't say anything controversial. But just the breadth of topics that we went through were pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
It's not often that you touch on all the topics that Matt Merletti touched on in that interview. Very few other people in the world could touch on those topics with such expertise as did Mr. Merletti.
So we will get to that in just a little bit. But Adam, let's start with the fact that Carolina's in Atlanta to see Georgia Tech this weekend. I think this is an enormous game. I just think it's the biggest game of the year to this point, and not just because it is the next game, although that is part of it. You're going into the open date next week, and so you have this situation. I think I've said this on the pod before, but you have this situation where if you win, you're 3-3. You build off the good feelings from the Clemson game. You have that open date feeling good, 500, second half of the season, wide open for you. Anything could happen. You lose this game. I think you lose the good feelings from the Clemson game. You go into the bye week disappointed that you lost, and at that point you'd be on a four-game losing streak, which no matter all the different things that have gone into it that we know is hard to be positive about. So it's just it is a crucial game in the story of this season, it feels like.
And especially, as you said, falling where it does before the bye week. It just feels like how you're going to feel for 2 weeks hinges on this game, which unfortunately Carolina doesn't have a great, especially recent history in Atlanta, but as we'll talk about, this is a very different Georgia Tech team than the one Carolina struggled against so much. But still, it's a road Coastal Division game. Carolina's not so good that they can just show up, which I think you've seen in the way Mac Brown has handled this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carolina's only won one time in Atlanta since Mac Brown's last tenure in Chapel Hill ended. That's crazy. Only once, and that was in 2015, as the kids say, 2015, when Carolina was down 21-0 in that game. And so it has just been a tough place to go. And this is, as Adam alluded to, not the same type of Georgia Tech team. Well, before we get to that, I want to talk about what you said about Coach Brown. He's been very adamant this week, building off what he talked about last week, and that is Carolina playing to its own standard regardless of opponent. And that we have seen that when the Tar Heels practice to a certain standard, they have a certain level of energy, they play to that certain standard, that they can play with anybody in the country. We've seen it. We know that's true. They've beaten South Carolina. They've beaten Miami. They had a great chance to beat Clemson. So we know that part is true. But we also know that if they don't do that, they can lose to anybody in the country, as we've seen. Although Wake and Appalachian are not bad teams. I'm not suggesting that. So the challenge, I think, and now in the next step of the maturation or growing up process for this team is to be able to do that on a consistent basis, and this is a terrific opportunity to try and do it. And, you know, Coach Brown has talked about, I think I mentioned this on the last pod. On Monday at the radio show, he told the story of, hey, he saw a player in the hallway of the football center, and he said, hey, have you watched as much tape on Georgia Tech at this point of the week that you did at Clemson at this point of the week? And the player said, no. And Coach Brown, like, pounded the table at the radio show, and he's like, that's what we have to get fixed. That's what I'm talking about. He's like, it has to be there every single week, and the consistency has to be there. And then his post-practice media session on Wednesday, it was pretty clear that he was not pleased in total with what had happened. He didn't say the practices were bad, but he said they were okay. And so if Carolina, he is very clearly trying to hammer that point home. He is doing things publicly to try to reinforce that, whether some of that is drummed up a little bit just to really try to hammer his point home, or if he's really that frustrated with it, I'm not sure. But it's clear that that's something that he's trying to get across to his team right now.
I think you have to remember that based on what we have seen from Mac Brown 2.0, there's nothing he does that is just on a whim,
right,
off the cuff. He hasn't thought about it before.
It is a calculated move.
Not in a bad way.
Right.
But he is very conscious of how he presents things, how things are taken. So he didn't just get hacked off at practice on Wednesday and say, I'm going to go in there and I'm just going to rip them because I'm so darn mad and I can't hold back. There have been times, I promise, when he's done those exact things and he's been mad about how practice went. And then he went up there and stood in front of the camera and said, oh, these young men are trying hard. Really appreciate Sally and I are happy with all they're doing and they're doing a great job. We're getting there. But on Wednesday, he decided it was time to push a different button. And you don't get to the Hall of Fame if you only know one button to push.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're getting to see a little more of the full Mac Brown picture. I think he knows this is a game where Carolina might watch the film and go, ooh, they're not very good. So he needs to amp them up a little more and tell them they're not trying hard enough, even if maybe they are, to make them feel that way, to get them to put a little more in so that you don't get the first half of the Wake Forest game.
Right.
Which, by the way, I think one of the most undersold stats of the season so far, the three teams Carolina's lost to is 14-0 combined.
Yeah. No,
Clemson, Wake Forest, Appalachian, they're 14-0. They haven't lost.
Sagarin has Carolina as the third hardest schedule in the nation to this point of the season. And it's hard to argue with that. I think that Carolina has week in and week out played a very good team. Now, Georgia Tech, at least in its body of work, is the least accomplished team that Carolina has played to this point of the season. Tech is just 1-3, and quite honestly, they've got some ugly losses. You know, they lost at home to the Citadel, who runs that triple option, so of course it was rubbed in a little bit even more because they're trying to transition away from that. Then they had their first of – everybody has two open dates this week, so they had their – or this year, so they had their first open week – and then come back and they go to Temple. Jeff Collins, their head coach, was the old head coach at Temple. So there was a lot of emotion going into that game, and they just didn't play very well. They lost 24-2. And, Adam, it's really the offensive numbers for Georgia Tech are not very good. There are 130 teams that play FBS football this year. They're 127th out of 130 in total yards per game. They are 130th out of 130 in points per game. And so I don't know if that's a huge – I mean, maybe that extreme is a bit of a surprise, but the fact that they're having a challenge trying to go from a purely triple option attack to a more traditional attack, which still keeps some option in it, but not nearly the same way that they did before. So they are struggling with that transition. I think their defense is pretty solid. It got ripped by Clemson, but a lot of people get ripped by Clemson.
Just not Jay Bateman.
Right. The other three games, I think their defense has been decently good. They beat South Florida 14-10. They did lose that Citadel game, but the triple option's hard to go against. And then Temple, they lost 24-2, but it only gave up 17 points. Seven of them were a fumble return for a touchdown. So it's for them, the issue has been on the offensive end. But just circling back to the point, on paper, Carolina should win this game. I think Carolina is better than Georgia Tech this season. But it just doesn't matter because that's 100% Carolina is better. So if 65% Carolina shows up, they can lose this game in a heartbeat.
Well, and I think as far as Georgia Tech goes, not only have their offensive numbers been down, but now they're down the starting center and their best receiver.
And their starting left tackle got hurt earlier in the year. And their starting running back didn't play in the second half of the last game due to injury. So they've been banged up for sure. And Jeff Collins is a different dude, their head coach. He doesn't put out a depth chart. He puts out this thing called above the line where, like, let's say – it says wide receiver above the line. Here are the seven players who have earned the right to be considered to have playing time. But they don't tell you who the starters are or who the backups are or who's hurt or who's not hurt. It's different. And so, and to that point, they've played three quarterbacks a ton. They will switch quarterbacks within a series. Like, it'll be first and 10, and one guy will be in, and then second and 8, and they bring somebody else in. And so, I don't know if all of that is trying to build a culture. I don't know if all of that is trying to find the best guys right this second to give them the best chance on every single play. But it also seems like the continuity has not been there for them because they are shuffling guys so much.
And it's difficult, I'm sure, trying to go from one system that is completely not your system. So you're trying to take this team that was built to run the triple option and do something else. So maybe you have to play three quarterbacks and you have to go out and find a graduate transfer tight end because the team doesn't have any tight ends and right. You need one. So you got to do some kind of weird stuff like that. But it definitely feels like it's just a lot. Some of the like writing your Instagram handle on the whiteboard,
yeah.
Some of the self-imposed nicknames they've given themselves. It's a lot. And if you win, I guess that'll be cool. But if you don't, you're out there. And as of right now, they're out there. But as far as defensively, their numbers against the pass are pretty good, but teams haven't had to throw against them. And one of the teams they played was the Citadel,
yeah.
Which doesn't throw ever.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know how much of those numbers are legitimate and how much are because teams have had some success running the ball and don't have to throw, or they've been so far ahead they don't have to throw. So you don't really know for sure what Sam Howell's going to see when he looks down the field.
You know, I think the transition from the option to what they're doing now, it seems to me, and this is not a super – I mean, an informed opinion only in reading about them, and I hashtag grinded on some film on them, Adam. And it seems to me that the spots where it is the most evident is at quarterback and on the offensive line. And those are two spots that it's tough to have question marks in and be good. The quarterback who played the most last game is James Graham. They also have Tobias Oliver, who played some against the Tar Heels last year. I'm going to tell you, Oliver is quick. I see why he was picked, why they have him in the previous offense, because his biggest plays and some of Tech's biggest plays are just him getting out of the pocket and running, and he's really good in that way. Lucas Johnson has started two games. Oliver has started two games. Oliver's played in all four. The other two quarterbacks have played in three of the four. I think Johnson is the better passer, but he's been shaken up. He didn't play last game. Graham played most of the game after Oliver started the game. Graham seems to be the best combination of running and passing right now that they have. They've put Oliver all over the field. They have him returning kicks, even though he's a quarterback. They have done some very unique things, and I do think it at least makes you get ready for a lot of stuff. And then on the offensive line, and again, Adam mentioned the injuries, and they're going to have a walk-on starting at center, a walk-on either starting at guard or being their main reserve at guard due to some injuries. And so that has hurt them some, but I think also you probably, I'm guessing, recruit different types of offensive linemen for the option than you do for a more traditional offensive look. And particularly in pass protection, they've had some trouble keeping guys off their quarterbacks.
This is the first time this year, I think, where you look at the teams on paper and you say Carolina is clearly better. I think Carolina has better personnel than Georgia Tech. Carolina, though, had even or arguably better personnel than a couple games they lost. And as you talked about, that Mac Brown has talked about, they were just a little too responsive. If you'll just come out and play against Georgia Tech and try to initiate things instead of waiting to see what Georgia Tech's going to do, you've got a chance to get a little lead and maybe coast a little. But you got to play, because if you don't, Carolina's not good enough to coast without getting the lead.
Carolina is not good enough against anyone to just show up and kick off and expect to win. They're just not right now. Maybe they will be one day, but that day is not today. And so it's a 4 o'clock kick. We'll be on the air at 3 p.m. radio-wise for Carolina and Georgia Tech. And as we referenced, it's been a tough trip for the Tar Heels for whatever reason. I think this will be another one of those cases where I'm not sure how much energy there'll be in the stadium, and so you've got to build some of your own, see what happens, and we'll find out.
It was kind of funny. It may have been on the radio show when Mac Brown was talking about Carolina's struggles in Atlanta, and you could tell it was one of those things that he was kind of aware of but didn't realize the depth of it until he looked at it.
Yeah.
You could hear in his voice, he said, I mean, we've only won down there one time in the 10 times since I left. You could tell he knew the Tar Heels had struggled some, but then he looked, or Jeremy gave him the records, and he looked at it. How is it possible that Carolina's lost 9 of 10 times in Atlanta since I was here? But they sure have, but got a chance to do something different on Saturday.
Adam, anything else about the game coming up, Carolina and Georgia Tech? Then the Tar Heels have an open date after that, which is going to – they badly need it to just get some rest and get healthier. It has been – it's just been a physical, hard start to the season, and Mac Brown has been very adamant that he's not using that as an excuse, which we've talked about. But they need this open date coming up.
Good time. Sometimes you get an open date that feels like it's bad timing. Been a couple of years where Carolina had them really late. This one feels like it comes at the right time.
And again, everybody has two this year, so the Tar Heels will have another one coming up. Okay, Adam, should we get to our Matt Merletti interview, or we can talk a little bit about basketball because they had media day, and I know practices have been going on, which we've seen. Do you want to talk about that now or wait till after we talk to Matt?
I feel like we got to get to Matt Merletti.
All right, let's do it. So, Matt Merletti, member of the Butch Davis era of Carolina football. We talked to Matt a lot about that and then about some other things as well. So let's get to that. We'll come back. We have a lot more to do after we chat with Matt Merletti. Before we get to that, Adam, holy smokes, I almost forgot to tell you, Adam, fire up the music. It's time for some heroes, Adam. Let me ask you a very important question that I think you know the answer to.
The answer is yes.
Oh, good. So you do know Tar Heel fans that work selflessly to improve the lives of others in their communities. LS Tractor wants to know about them. LS Tractor and the Tar Heels have partnered up to recognize hometown heroes from throughout the state. Visit GoHeels.com/hero to nominate someone you know for a chance to be recognized on the court at a basketball game this season. It is all brought to you by LS Tractor, proud partner of Carolina Athletics. One more time, that website is GoHeels.com.
Ever heard of it?
/hero. Adam, let's go ahead and do our champions watch too while we're at it. This, of course, is brought to you by the good folks of UNC Healthcare. The team at UNC Healthcare is dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds. That includes you and your family. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. This is when Adam highlights someone for us to be ready to keep an eye on this upcoming weekend that is not football or basketball. Adam, what you got?
I got volleyball.
Oh, that's good. They were on my list of things to talk about, actually.
Well, that's part of the reason why I went volleyball. Now, the thing to keep an eye on is the ACC home opener is Sunday at 1 o'clock against Virginia Tech. First home ACC volleyball match of the season. It'll be on ACC Network Extra, so you can stream it, or you can just go. I got to tell you, college volleyball is an underrated spectator sport.
We have talked about it before here on the pod.
A lot of points, a lot of spikes right in people's faces.
A lot of energy.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know what's going on, but it's usually entertaining. But another reason why volleyball finds itself in this category is big win on Wednesday night over at NCSU, the Wolfpack. The Tar Heels were down but came back to win 3-2. That was a good win. That was their first ACC win of the season. Haven't maybe had the start they wanted to have, but that was a really good win on Wednesday and got a chance to come home on Sunday and face Virginia Tech.
All right. Now we need to get to Matt Merletti. We're going to do that. Come back. We have a five-second challenge to get to. I've been working on it all week.
There's nowhere to go but up from that.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't fall off the floor.
We have five-second challenge, we have Adam's list, and some other stuff to get to when we return, but let's get to our interview with Matt Merletti.
We have been looking forward to this interview because our guest today is one of the most interesting people to come through Carolina football in our era, officially known as the Jones and Adam era.
The important era.
Yeah. There was the choo-choo era and then the Jones and Adam era. And in the Jones and Adam era, one of the most interesting guys to talk to was always Matt Merletti, defensive back. You remember him on several really good Butch Davis teams. And Matt, nice enough to give us a...
First ever Butch Davis recruit. Is that right?
Not many people know
number
that.
Number A1,
yes. Yeah.
You were the very first.
First commit.
Which you had a connection a little bit already.
Oh, yeah. Definitely had a connection. We, you know, him being the coach of the Cleveland Browns, my dad worked for the Browns at the time. I was one of the ball boys, so he knew me as like the little eighth, ninth grader, you know, in whenever we first started out there as a ball boy, me and my brother and I. And so I knew him from there on. He just kind of knew me as Lou Merletti's son.
Right.
And as I got a little bit older, he ended up getting fired from the Cleveland Browns. And I think he was just doing NFL Network stuff at the time. And he came to a couple of my games, and that's when I started to kind of do well. And he let us know, I don't know if this was appropriate or not, to tell me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter now,
Matt. He didn't tell me who, but he said, I'm getting a Division I job here pretty soon, and I want to recruit you. So I'm, you know, scrambling the newspapers, trying to figure everything out. Like, who's in need of a head coach? And I guess regional bias. I thought it was at Michigan State at the time. I think that was before, what's his name?
D'Antonio.
D'Antonio, yeah.
D'Antonio.
Yeah.
Mark.
Mark.
Yeah, the guy named... Yeah,
we'll put it all together
guy.
Here. I'd like to buy a vowel.
So that's kind of how that all connection, that's where it kind of originated. And then he was in Chapel Hill, and I came down later that fall. I think it was November, December. It was after the season ended, and the rest is kind of history.
Would you have gone to Michigan State if he had gone there?
No. I'm sorry, if he had gone there, yes. I thought you were saying, yeah, otherwise. Yeah, I probably would have.
So we got a ton of stuff to talk about. Let's just start off with what you're doing now. What's going on in your life? What takes up your daily life right now?
So the daily life, it's my son at home. He is going to be 14 weeks tomorrow.
Oof.
So a little over 3 months, I guess, 3.5. And that's been incredible. It really has been. It's someone told me before we had that's our first, by the way. Someone told us beforehand that it's the hardest and most rewarding thing you'll ever do. And he is sleeping through the night right
nice.
Now. Yeah, we started sleep training him for, like, you know, the first week we got him out of our room and we started doing, you know, the right thing. We were very, very strict on a schedule, and it really paid off. So he's been sleeping through the night for about a month and a half now. So that's been pretty good. That's easily been the thing that's taken up the most amount of time, but also changed careers during that time period, which is, you know, why don't we just do it all at once?
Yeah.
Yes.
No big deal.
Yeah. No big changes or anything. And so I was doing medical device sales for about 5 years or so. And then I've now transitioned. I'm doing employee benefits consulting for a firm in Raleigh, actually. So we have an office in Raleigh. There's a bunch in the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
But so I just started doing that in late July, so I'm not too far in. But, yeah, getting licensed and all that jazz right now.
When you think back on your time at Carolina, those years playing football over at Keenan, what are the first things that come to mind?
First things that come to mind are just the relationships that I gained from the whole experience. You know, I met some of my best friends, guys who were in my wedding. Ultimately, one of the connections led to me meeting my wife, and, you know, those are the things that I think about first. It's just, you know, some of my closest friends. Obviously, a lot of memories in it too. Just driving through campus on the way here, it's funny. It just kind of brings you back, and, you know, the smell of everything, which is funny to say, but, you know,
like here in Pod World Headquarters,
exactly.
The smell in here.
This brings back the
this
thought
in particular.
Of locker rooms.
That stench in particular, no, but like the, you know, just being in Chapel Hill in the fall always just kind of brings you back, and always, you know, just incredible memories here. So those are the kind of few things that I think about.
So the Butch Davis era did not end the way anybody wanted it to end. I think it's fair to say that you were a Butch Davis guy. Were you guys angry when all that went down?
I don't know if angry is the right word, but just kind of confused when it all happened. It was just kind of shocking. I remember we had gone home for, I'm using air quotes here for the listeners, summer break for like the week before training camp started, and so everyone was back home. I was up in Cleveland, and that's when he got fired. So I remember talking to Everett Withers on the phone, and that's when we didn't know who was even going to be interim head coach.
Right.
And he even sounded, you know, just kind of like, we don't know what to do on the phone. And then in terms of, like, you know, this is, I remember him saying specifically, this is just really kind of a messed up deal. And we're not really sure, you know, where this is going to take us yet. But, you know, that was going into my senior year, my redshirt senior year. And he was like, you know, we're going to need you as a leader. And, you know, nothing changes. We're still playing football and you got to get ready to go. So, no, not anger, but it was, you know, I personally, yeah, I was upset that he was the reason we had all those great recruits in there. And he was just kind of the brain of the entire thing. And it's funny, he was kind of a CEO type coach as it is. So he wasn't even so much involved, at least on our end, from our eyes and the players, in the game plans on offense or defense. So in that sense, it didn't really change much, but just having that leader in the locker room and being the guy that you looked up to, and he was, you know, people almost kind of feared him in a way, in a healthy way, I think. That wasn't there anymore. So that was the biggest kind of thing.
We had TJ Yates on a couple years ago, and he was talking about just the scene on the bus going to Atlanta for the LSU game, waiting to leave Keenan. What do you remember for the people who didn't live through that or weren't Carolina fans at that point in time? That was such a confusing time, but not just for fans, but also for players.
Oh, yeah. It was confusing, I guess, is the best way to describe it, just because I remember going into practicing that week. I didn't really listen to much of to anything on the media, read newspapers all that much or anything. You know, anybody that was really talking about us, I really didn't put my eyes or ears on it. So I was very much out of the loop, and I think that's probably how most players on the team were. But I remember that week of practice, I'm third string at that point. I'm coming off an ACL. This will be my first game back, the LSU mm-hmm. game in 2010, was it? Yeah. And so I'm third string safety. I don't even remember what they had me at the time, free or strong. We played kind of both. But third string, and then every day before practice, Everett Withers would put up our depth chart. And we put it up there, and John Smith and I were first team. And I'm like, did some guy, like, they must be really mad at Deontay and, you know, Denoris and all them. And I'm like, what is that? And you're like, I really thought it was a kind of like the coach is sending a message to those starters, like, you guys are in trouble, you know?
Right.
But no one said anything. No one explained anything to us. So it was like totally confused. I was like, okay, whatever. You know, like, that's on, like, whatever, a Wednesday. That was the middle of the week. It was definitely not, I don't think it was the first practice of the week. But he didn't say anything. He said, this is what we're going with this week. And everyone was like looking around the room. Like,
you know,
okay,
we're playing LSU, right?
Yeah. Did someone miss a memo here? Yeah. Typo, maybe? So that's kind of how it went. And then, like, they're coaching the heck out of us that day. And you could just tell there was something else brewing. And then, you know, word started to spread, like, oh, you know, some guys might be out. You know, there's a bunch going on, and but yeah, confusing is a great way to describe it. But again, even me, that ended up being my first career start, and that was whatever. I'm going to say Wednesday during the week when that first, you know, that depth chart went up on the screen, and I remember just I kept thinking, like, there's no way that this happens, you know, and that I start the game, and not just me, all those other guys. I think it was an entire new. Was it?
It was close.
Been,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at the defensive backs in the room. I think Jabari started that game. Jabari, drawing a blank on his last
Price.
Name. Terrible. Yeah, Jabari Price, Trey Boston, I think both started at corner. Two true freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Robinson, John Smith, all playing for the first time. And it was just, you know, kind of mayhem. They were just trying to get everybody on the same page. Make sure everyone knew, like, our signals. I'm serious. Like,
yeah.
Stuff like that where you had to make sure everybody's on the same page. That was the biggest thing, I think, for us. And let then you get out there on the first play, and you look out, and LSU's across from you. That was I'll never forget that moment.
On the other side of that season was the Music City Bowl against Tennessee. I still think one of the stranger games that I've ever scene. Just the whole scene of the game with so many Tennessee fans, with it being in Nashville, and of course the way it ended, and just the way that whole season had gone. Sometimes, and this happened with Carolina, I think, with the South Carolina game this year, there's like this emotional release after the game. Was that one of those type of games for you guys that year?
Definitely was one of those games. It wasn't the first one, though. It was 100% one of those things that you're describing. But I think the one that sticks out in my mind, that kind of emotional release, was the Florida State game that year as well. There's a, you know, down to the wire game. And for some reason, that sticks out a little bit more in my mind, just because it was a back and forth game, crazy ending, much like the Tennessee game. And just being, I think, it's funny, I'm describing the Florida State, but in many ways, the Tennessee game was like an away game, just because it was like a home crowd for Tennessee as well. But I was going to say, going in the, you know, being an away game at Florida State, going in the locker room afterwards, and everyone's jumping up and down, celebrating, and it was just, for whatever reason, that stuck out even more. But there was a little bit of, you know, confusion and kind of mayhem with that Tennessee game. People throwing beer bottles at us. Everyone, you know, have to put their helmets on. And
yeah.
Trying to keep our guys from not going in the stands and fighting people. It was really kind of a hectic thing. So I think because of those kind of bad things sprinkled into it, maybe it's not a good memory for me personally, just because I was trying to make sure that, you know, our guys actually didn't get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, those were glass beer bottles. I don't know why. It's funny, being from Cleveland, you guys may or may not remember this, but the rule that came into being for the NFL to have plastic beer bottles, and I think that got rid of bottles completely. Now it's just cups. But at the time, this was in, it may have been when Butch was there, actually. They called it Bottlegate. And the Browns were playing, I think, the Jaguars. It doesn't matter who they were playing. But the refs completely botched the end of a game, and all the Browns fans started throwing glass bottles, and people were getting hit in the head, cut open.
Yeah.
And I mean, thousands of bottles are on the field, and the refs had to run out, you know, in the tunnel and everything like that, or getting pelted with bottles. It was a huge, huge deal. And anyways, so we were playing, fast forward now to 2010, we were playing Tennessee, and they had glass bottles in the stadium for some reason. And like forever, they have not, since that moment, they have not had glass bottles in any NFL stadium. I don't know why they had a bunch in that game, but we had to put helmets on and avoid getting hit. People were really, really pissed off.
Yeah, people really were mad. Like,
oh,
that,
yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
People are sad to lose the game. After that game, those people were mad. And I'll never forget walking out of there, I saw David Thornton. And that was the smartest thing I ever did. I, like, snuggled up to David Thornton, like, come on, buddy, let's walk out to the front. Nobody said a word to us, and I think it was because of me. Nobody
right.
wanted to mess with us. As you were in kind of the hurricane of that 2010 season, it wasn't just the LSU game that was confusing. It was confusing from week to week. Did you guys talk to each other about it? Did you know what was going on? How did you see it from the inside?
No, I didn't. I don't think that anybody knew really knew what was going on. Yes, people were talking constantly, but really, it's such a boring answer. But like, we were really trying to focus on like the game and trying to focus on our game plan, and just because there was so much outside noise, that it's hard to keep track of it. And again, I don't think I'm the only one who was like this, but I tried not to pay attention to it. I really didn't, just because when you start adding those things in, you're not going to be able to focus on your job and focus on what you're supposed to do. And so we just tried to keep everything in-house and really just kind of focused on what you had to do. It's such a boring answer, but it's the truth. You know, it's not like we were, you know, there was a bunch of whispers in the locker room or anything like that. I mean, yeah, like you would hear, like, hey, you know, I think Denoris might have been one of the first ones to come back that year. He was only a couple games after he didn't do anything wrong, by the way. And I mean, people would say, like, hey, I heard Denoris is coming back, like things like that, but nothing to the effect of, you know, everyone knew what was going on and, you know, everyone was involved in it or anything like that. Like, it really wasn't like that.
I have, or since you graduated from Carolina, like, you've come back and spoken at Rams Club events where I've been there, and you've been very positive about Carolina. At any point or any piece of you, was it soured on your Carolina experience because of the way things went, or was it always just kind of like, well, that was an odd set of circumstances, but I still loved what happened there?
I mean, I didn't love that ending of it, but just because we were a dark horse to potentially win the national championship that year in 2010. We had a ton of NFL talent. So no, that didn't sour my experience by any means. I really did have a positive experience at UNC and I loved it. So no, that didn't really affect it too much. I try to be a positive person in general and just try to focus on those good things. But but no, that didn't sour anything really.
How good was that team if it could have played a whole season with a full deck?
I mean, I remember reading going into that season, the one I had said I'm not looking at media. I remember reading that we were a dark horse to win the national championship that year. And we legit believed that. We believed we could beat anybody. It wasn't, I don't know if we were exactly talking about it. We were, I think, more focused on just winning the ACC championship first. And that was like how we broke down every single, you know, workout or practice, anything like that. It was ACC champs. But that was the potential for that group, 100%. We had a ton of talent.
Yeah, I remember, like, the big question before everything happened was quarterback, and was T.J. Yates going to be able to hold off Bryn Renner? And
that's
then
right,
T.J.
Yeah.
ended up having a terrific year and, of course, went on to a solid pro career as well.
Why was Butch Davis so good at assembling that kind of talent? When he came in the living room, what made him so good?
He just had something about him. I don't know if I could exactly put it into words. It was kind of just, I guess, the it factor. But he had such a history of success with developing NFL talent. I think that really spoke to a lot of players. And I think that would probably be the biggest thing of what he had whenever he came into a living room like that is just his, I mean, he has Super Bowl rings. You know, did he ever win a national championship or not? No, I think right when he left.
But he left that great Miami team.
Yeah, that's what it was. Literally the year after, I think 2001 or whatever it was, Larry Coker won that one. And but everyone kind of knew that was Butch, and he always recruited NFL talent, and I forget the number of first-round draft picks that he's had. It's absurd. So to be able to have that pedigree and come into someone's family room and be able to talk like that, along with that it factor, that confidence that he has and that kind of CEO mentality that he has – it's attractive.
You mentioned having people were almost afraid of him. And you said a healthy level of that, which
sure.
I totally agree with, even from just people who worked around the program.
I was afraid of him.
Yeah. So I'd just be from a player coach dynamic, you know, what makes that a healthy where you respect him a whole lot, but you don't want to mess up? I mean, how does that relationship end up occurring in your opinion?
I think it's just kind of his personality, his swagger that he has to him and that pedigree, you know who he is, his history and everything. Everyone just had a tremendous amount of respect for him and you really didn't want to screw up. And it's not like he would just embarrass guys or like, you know, like it was not mean hearted by any means. It was just, I think it was more of a respect thing and you didn't want to let him down. And that was definitely felt throughout the locker room. I remember as we were kind of figuring all that out, though, in 2007, we went 4-8 his first season. And there was a lot of, I'll say, bad eggs in the locker room where, you know, kind of, I do not want to bash Coach Bunting or anything like that because everyone speaks highly of him. Everyone loved him. And I didn't have him as a coach, but even me, you know, meeting him and everything like that, he's a great guy. But there were some definite cultural issues on our team that Butch inherited. And I don't know where those stemmed from or anything like that, but that kind of had to get weeded out, and that culture had to change in 2007, and part of that was because of who Butch was and the type of CEO mentality that he had and the respect that everyone had for him and that healthy fear that I spoke about. That was all important and all kind of ingredients into it.
For people who have never been on a team, what does that mean when the culture's not quite right? Like, what's happening, and how do you fix it?
One story in particular sticks out to me to kind of illustrate what that culture was like. But where I came from in Cleveland, Ohio, I went to Cleveland St. Ignatius High School. It's a college prep school and known for their football. And it's the most important thing in the world to all those football players up in Cleveland who play on that team. And if you work out year-round along with the other sports you play, obviously, but if you're not trying hard and giving your best effort, you are an outcast in that program. So that's all I knew. And when I came down here, again, I really don't want to make this sound like this is, you know, bashing Coach Bunting or his era or anything like that, or those other teammates. They were my teammates too. But I remember, you know, obviously giving everything that I had in workouts, and I came in, I was like 180 pounds soaking wet, little kid, you know, but I remember getting made fun of for trying hard. And I'm like, can you believe this kid? He's actually trying. It's funny now, but like, I remember feeling like this is so backwards. Like I could not, it was the most frustrating thing in the world to have guys literally making fun of you. And it wasn't just like a personal thing for me at all. It's like, that's the type of mentality that you have. Like you think it's like, you don't want to try hard. You don't want to get better. You know, like that's the kind of what we, I guess, what we had to change. And with that story, I forgot your question.
you just answered it.
Okay, but what means. Would it be like on a team? That's what you said. So that's what we were up against in our own locker room, let alone any opponent that we had. So like we had to fix ourselves first and all get on the same page, work towards a common goal, all those different things. But we had to fix kind of our culture first. So that's kind of what it's like to be on a team at certain times or – you know, obviously things got a lot better and things changed quite a bit, you know, in our own locker room. After that first year, things completely changed. You know, that was the hardest time, though, was 2007, and it wasn't just because we were losing. It was because of that culture.
Do you still follow the Tar Heels? Are you up to date on what they're doing?
I'm fairly up to date, yeah. I'm going to all the games. I don't know all of the names anymore, which is, you know, as those years go by, you play with, you know, players less and less, and then all of a sudden it's like, I've never played with any of these guys.
Yeah.
So you still know, you know, the main names, but I don't know every guy top to bottom. So, but yeah, I'm loving what Coach Brown is doing, and he's just doing an excellent job. It feels different. In a good way. And I think everybody who was at that Miami game would say the same thing and would feel that as well.
He's talked a lot about the Carolina football family, and I think your family's had the chance to meet him.
My brother and I have, yeah.
Right. How has he tried to make everybody feel incorporated in that football family? Because sometimes it's been fractured by coach. There's been the Butch guys and the Bunning guys and the pre-Bunning guys. But he's trying to bring them all together. What has he tried to do and what progress has been made and what's still left to do with that?
I think there's always going to be work to do there, but he has done a great job of keeping everything inclusive and inviting guys in. And I think it's, again, just kind of his personality. It's similar to Butch in that sense of where he's just got that it factor. He's a very personable guy, makes you feel welcome. And that's something that I immediately felt whenever I first met him. And that's just kind of one of those things that it's really hard to put into words, like I mentioned with Butch. Both of them have it, though, whatever that respect is. And maybe it's just the past success, I don't know, with his national championship at Texas and everything like that. Maybe that, I think that all kind of factors into it, but he definitely has it. And I think that speaks volumes, especially with this 2020 recruiting class that we have coming up. It's awesome. It's one of the, as far as I know, as last I heard, top 10 in the country.
Mm-hmm. Close to it, yeah.
So yeah, it's, it definitely speaks volumes of him and where this program is headed, which I'm so excited about.
All right, Matt, let's change gears a little bit. Tell us about your dad. It's such a phenomenal story, an interesting story. And what can you tell us that's not classified, Matt, that we can hear about?
So what you're getting at is my dad was in the Secret Service for 25 years, I think it was. And
that's so awesome, by the way.
So he was in the Secret Service for 25 years, and he protected Reagan after he was shot.
We need to get somebody in here. Get Merletti in here.
Bush Sr. And Clinton. He protected those presidents. Clinton, he was the head of the Presidential Protective Detail, PPD. He was head of PPD, and he was the guy with his hand on Clinton's hip as they're walking through a crowd. And he did all of that, and then in 1997 or 8, he became the director of the Secret Service. And so he's head of the entire thing, oversaw all of that. And growing up, that is your dad. I just knew him as dad. You know, it's kind of hard to, I guess, describe in that sense just because I don't think I understood what that really meant at the time. I'm, you know, how old was I at the time? Less than 10 years old.
Sure.
And so growing up, you know, you get to go to the White House, you got to meet presidents, which was really neat. Got to see the...
I bet.
got to, what else? every year the Super Bowl winner gets to go to the White House. We would get to go meet, you know, get autographs from the teams. Got to meet like Brett Favre, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, all them. From what years were that? I don't know, 95, 96.
Yeah, like mid-90s.
Yep. So that was all just, you know, incredible. That was extra, you know, cool for my brother and I growing up because we're huge football fans. And that was probably the coolest things that we remember, just getting to go meet those Super Bowl teams. But there was also some danger along yeah. with it as well, which, again, I didn't understand at the time. And really kind of took years later for me to truly understand it. But good story that was probably the best one that my family has is this was early 90s, I believe. And Clinton was president at the time, and I don't remember the country, but it was some Middle Eastern country. Whenever the president goes overseas, they send an advance, Secret Service sends an advance team 2 weeks ahead of time, and they start listening to radio chatter. They start mapping, you know, different routes to the same location, route A, B, and C. Route A is the fastest, B is a little bit slower, C is the slowest. Just in case something goes wrong on that route, they need to change plans, whatever it happens to be. But they start dressing in the local garb and, you know, just to try to blend in, and just they're an advanced team. They're there to just kind of do recon. And whenever the president comes, advanced team would give my dad a report, give him up to speed on everything. And that's what was happening in this particular country at the time. They were going to meet the head of state, president, whatever it was. And Clinton was always famous for being late. And of course, he's late, and they're rushing to get out of there. And somebody from the advance team, who was listening to the radio chatter, they said, "You know, Mr. Merletti, there's a problem." And he's like, "What is it?" He said, "We just heard on the radio that there's a wedding at the bridge." And that doesn't really sound like much other than, okay, there's a wedding, and on Route A, there was a bridge that they had to go over. And he's like, "Okay, well, is there anything we can do at the time?" But at that time, just kind of like American culture, certain things go in and out of style, like with lingo. And at the time, in terrorist lingo, wedding meant assassination attempt.
Whoa.
So, you know, that's an eye-opener. Big deal. So definitely not going Route A, which had the bridge on it. So he said, okay, well, we're already late. You know, we have to go a different route. And in these scenarios, like assassination attempts like that, you know, where it's just like potential knowledge, you don't go tell the president that. You know, that's going to really throw him off.
Sure.
so he has to go tell the president. My dad has to go tell the president, like, hey, we're going to be even later. We have to go a different route. There's been an issue. And he has to go tell this in front of all my dad's guys. And President Clinton rips him and just, you know, blows him out in front of all of his guys and everything. And my dad had to hold his ground and say, we're going Route B. Like, I'm sorry, but we have to. There's no question about it. So they send a bomb team over to the bridge. There is a remote bomb at the bridge. They defuse it and everything like that. And they go on about their trip. Everything goes fine, no hiccups. They end up doing their research and figuring out who's behind that potential attack. And it's an up-and-coming terrorist trying to make a name for himself named Osama bin Laden.
Whoa.
That's probably the most awesome story that's ever been told on the pod.
So
I count Matt's like, yeah, this is just something we talk about like at Thanksgiving dinner. So, you guys remember that Osama story?
So not over yet. So long story short, something similar happens, you know, a couple months later in another country. And just as the Secret Service starts following this guy, Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden starts doing his research on the Secret Service. And they're following, Secret Service is following him, CIA is following him everywhere, listening to everything he's saying, putting out there. And they picked up radio chatter that he was talking to his men saying, I want to know who Lou Merletti is, where he lives, he has a family, everything like that. And, you know, wants to get all the intel he
sure.
can. I don't remember if he threatened to kill him or not.
By kill them, you meant you.
Yes. And so as a result of that, my family and I, we all had to go to Beltsville, Maryland at Secret Service headquarters and learn how to shoot submachine guns and had to learn how – I'm at, I don't know, 8 years old at this point, and we had to learn how to shoot submachine guns and learn how to handle weapons, how to keep an eye on a tail behind you, how to detect a package bomb, all these different things at such a young age, which at the time I'm thinking, like, I get to shoot all these guns and have some fun here. without really realizing the gravity of the situation. But obviously, you know, he moved on to September 11th attacks, unfortunately, and we were, you know, my family was an afterthought in that sense. But it was a huge weight off our shoulders whenever the American troops got him. Is maybe as sick as that is to say. That's kind of how we felt. It was a relief.
Sure.
Did you think all the other 8-year-olds were doing this? Like everybody goes for their weekend to shoot their machine guns?
Or no.
What did they tell you? Why did they say you were doing this?
I don't remember the why. I knew that everyone wasn't doing that for sure. I knew that. But I don't remember the why at all. I don't know that they explained it to me or anything. I think it was just kind of something that you have to do, or you know, this is an opportunity that you have. I really don't remember the details of that. I just remember doing it.
So now that you've obviously you're an adult now, and you look back, and I mean, I'd just be interested in how that hits you now, and what you think about your dad now that maybe back then you said, "Oh, he's just dad," but now that you have this totally different perspective, how your view on that has changed, if at all?
It's totally different now, just because you kind of understand it a little bit more. You have a little bit better of a worldview and understanding of things. So it's hard to put into words how it makes you feel about your own dad. It's what he did is just incredible. And I'm at a loss for words. I really don't know how to describe it. It's just one of those things that you have that much more respect for him. And the fact that we had no idea what he was going through at the time, or you know, now having my own son, I can't imagine somebody threatening my life and my son's life. I cannot imagine what that was like to have to do those things. So just a tremendous amount of respect and love for him.
You know how people outside of sports sometimes see sports differently than those of you who are actually involved in it, and you know the actual people and just see the whole thing differently? How do you think you see the major world leaders side of the world differently than the rest of us who didn't see it as closely as you did?
I don't know that I saw that much behind the curtain to even really have a good answer for that. It's really, I feel like I see it like everybody else does in that sense. Just because I've been away from that for so long, and you know, since I grew up. So unfortunately, yeah, that's kind of nothing too interesting there.
Would people's minds be blown if they knew, like, I mean, like, even the 2 week ahead recon stuff, and I think most people kind of understand that happens, but I'm sure they don't understand the level of detail and the level of work that goes into it. I'm guessing people's minds would just be blown if they knew everything that was happening for every event like that.
As far as I know, yeah, like that's what
he knows. It's all classified, Adam. He's just not telling.
Dad, I remember asking my dad about like Area 51, all these things.
Yeah, you get the important
and
stuff.
And he would totally like poo-poo me, like, "Oh, that's not true." And like, so, but yeah, there's a tremendous amount of detail that goes into all of that. And you know, Secret Service has had some. They've been in the news for the wrong reasons here the last whatever, probably 10 years or so. Which my dad has been, you know, upset about, because for the longest time it was just the most respected thing in the world, and it's still tremendously respected. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of detail that goes into all of that and planning. I mean, you're protecting the most important person in the world, which is crazy to I can't imagine, cannot imagine.
Protecting the president to Cleveland Browns seems like a slightly unusual career change. What happened there? Because for people who don't know, your dad was the director of security. Is that right? Started out there for the Browns?
Yeah, he was the director of security at first. His title changed throughout the years, but that was like ultimately what he was known for. Stadium operations, security, all those different things that somebody with his background would be able to do. And the connection happened because President Clinton, I don't remember exactly how he knew him, but knew this guy named Al Lerner, self-made billionaire. Marine, everything like that. So my dad had met this guy, Al Lerner, you know, a few times, and they had the military connection. My dad was in the Army and in Vietnam and all that. And he had a connection with this guy, Mr. Lerner, and he ended up purchasing the rights to the Cleveland Browns in whatever that was, the late 90s, to bring them back to Cleveland in 1999.
Right.
And for those that don't remember, the Browns left Cleveland in, I think, 96 and became the Baltimore Ravens. Cleveland was left without a team. So they were without a team for a few years, and then in 1999, the Browns came back to Cleveland. That's how that connection happened. Al Lerner reached out to my dad and said, I want to have the best security in the NFL. And he said, I want you and whoever else you want to bring. So my dad brought a bunch of people to Cleveland and did the security for the Browns for a number of years.
So you said a teammate, I think you said this, helped you meet your wife, right? Now, your wife was a Dolphins cheerleader, is that right?
That's right.
So how did that connection occur?
So this is a funny story. Whenever someone asks me this...
Amy is her name, right?
That's right. Good memory. So whenever someone asks me this, I usually give them the short answer and say, oh, mutual friends.
Nah, keep going. We got long form here, man.
Yeah, exactly. We have a long form here, so I will tell the story. Halfway inappropriate on my end, but I'll explain why. So when my friends and I were in school still, we called it pregame before we would go out to the bars, and you'd have a couple of beers beforehand, listen to some music, have some friends over. It's like a party before the party, before you go out. And and I always had a knack for prank phone calls.
And, really a lost art now that the whole phone game is different.
Exactly. So growing up, the immature side of me was always good at prank phone calls. I never cracked a smile, never laughed, never lost character, anything like that. And we would always do prank, not always, we would do prank phone calls every now and then whenever we were, having a couple beers before we went out and just to have a laugh or two. But we would, one person would put it on speakerphone and somebody else's phone would put it on like the voice memo thing to record it. So we would have it,
See, this is the Secret Service background. Right. Like, all the details are taken care of.
The rest of us knuckleheads are just, like, picking up the landline, doing the hurry.
Is your refrigerator running?
Meanwhile, Matt's got, like, the tapes are rolling.
Exactly.
So, guys in the van outside.
So we would have two phones on the table. We'd come up, like my friends and I would come up with a story. It'd usually be like a family friend or one of their friends to come up with, a story to tell or a story for the call, and that would be it. And so the prank phone calls, we had recordings of like all of them, and not that there was like maybe 15 of them or something like that we had. That's a guess. And so Zach Pianalto, one of my roommates at the time who had those recordings and all that stuff, he ended up dating a girl from his hometown named Kylie. Kylie was a Miami Dolphins cheerleader. So she, he let her listen to a bunch of them after they had been dating for a while and everything. And she was like, well, I want him to get some of my friends next time you're with them. And he had planned to come up. So we were in Wilmington, I think at Connor Barth's house. And Casey was there. Zach was there. Zach Pianalto was there. It doesn't matter. But we were all pre-gaming before we went out. And Zach told me, like, hey, my girlfriend wants you to get a couple of her teammates on the cheerleading team with a prank phone call. So we came up with this.
I'm sure that was not a popular suggestion at that point in time.
I mean, so I'm thinking, like, I'm thinking, like, well, I'm not holding back at all because I'm never going to meet these girls. So we ended up... prank phone calling two of her name was Zach's now wife is Kylie, two of Kylie's friends, and we prank phone called them both that night. Neither of them answered, so there were voicemails. We left the voicemails and we went out and had a good time and kind of forgot about it. And turns out that one of them ended up being my now wife, and she thought it was funny. Obviously, knew it was a big joke. And we met, I guess just through that. And then, it's funny. I didn't have her number after that. I had the recording of it, but I didn't call from my phone. So I didn't have her number or anything like that. We exchanged numbers. We, went back and forth and talked for about a month. And then, I went down to meet her in Florida. That's where she still lived, and the rest is history. So it started with a prank phone call.
Nice. What's the worst prank you've ever had against you, Adam? Do you remember?
I have done it to others. I don't know that I've had it done to me.
Oh, Matt. Hey, let's talk.
I got your number. Yeah.
I'm guessing that most of the common population wouldn't have as high a success rate with turning prank call into wife.
Into wife, yeah.
There's a big jump from there to there that I think most of us would not be able to make.
All right, let's just look at the 10,000-foot view of this story. prank phone call, an NFL cheerleader, and then she becomes your wife.
Yeah. That's like,
right? How many dudes are like, God, I can prank phone call a cheerleader?
That's easy.
Easy. Yeah.
Anybody can do that.
Hey, I'm the guy who left that voicemail that was slightly inappropriate. I just want to see if you want to go out. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, man.
Another kind of part of your story when you were here was your brother Mike, who, Army Ranger, right?
Yep.
Is he still in?
He is not. He's in the FBI now.
Oh, well. Hopefully he'll do something with his life. So
he'll get it together one day.
But at the time, he was serving overseas. He was in Afghanistan and lots of other bad places. And he had brought the flag back, and you carried the flag out on the field. I just wonder what you've learned from observing him. It seems like you've seen every possible angle of this world, just to make it nice and small. What you learned from all the things he's done?
From what I've learned from all the things he's done, really just kind of a duty to country is the biggest thing that I think I take away from him and from his experiences, you know, from what he's been able to tell me. That's the biggest thing. My family was pretty much all military except me. I'm like the black sheep in that sense. So I've always kind of felt that duty to serve, and I know my moment hasn't passed me by to do that, but I don't think I'm going to do that. And so that's always been something that I've always kind of thought of and looked up to my brother in that sense, just because he served in every sense of the word. And, I remember his story from when he was in high school on September 11th and seeing that on TV, you know, his teachers put that on the television and seeing that and feeling the call, like I need to serve. And we had kind of grown up wanting to do that anyways, just looking up to our own dad. And, so yeah, that's, ultimately what I think of. I think of his service and not just with our country. That's kind of who he is in general. There's, service is something that that's very important to him, and something that he's done throughout his life. Even I always think about our high school. Our motto was I'm trying to think. There's two different mottos. The one that I'm thinking of is you want to be a man for others, and the entire thing was about service and just being there for somebody else, somebody who needs it, and he did that in high school, college, everything, you know, and then obviously in the military, and then is continuing to do it now. So that's ultimately what I think of.
All right, Matt, before we let you go, just what's next for you? Obviously, you've got a lot of changes going, new job, new baby. Just what's these next couple of weeks, months look like for you, you think? Just hanging on?
I'm just trying to keep my head above water, I guess. We started daycare. I didn't say that. Yeah, we did that, but I mean, really, I'm just trying to get my feet under me with a new job and continuing to be a present father as much as I can, and still going to all the UNC games and enjoying that. That's ultimately what I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I'm enjoying it, really loving it.
Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your.
What an interview with Matt Merletti. Wait, I mean, between prank calling your NFL cheerleader wife to start your relationship, I mean, that one, if that story alone had been in it, it would have been great. But then you had in the whole how cool his dad is and Osama bin Laden. I mean, Adam, it was all over the place. It was awesome.
I don't like to put this on anyone, because this is a heavy mantle to bear. I think that might have been a potty contender.
It may be on the list. At minimum on the list.
What we have to keep in mind is, this is a little shop talk.
Yeah.
We heard the voicemail in question.
Yeah.
You didn't hear that in Podland, but we did. That made it better. And I don't want to give away the farm, but I'm going to tell you that the following phrase was used in that voicemail. Quote, sexy Davy Crockett.
We need the voicemail. I think we're going to have to reach back out to Matt and see if he'll let us, if he will relent and allow us to air the voicemail.
Possibly even a lightly edited version.
Yeah, we'll need to edit it.
There might be a few holes.
Yeah.
Might have to black out a few things, yeah, like when you submit to a Freedom of Information request.
Right. Yeah.
But man, it's high quality. But Matt Merletti's high quality.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Adam, that interview with Matt was brought to you by our friends at the Independent Insurance Agent of North Carolina, and they want you to know, of course, that texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. That may not seem like that long. And as we prove, it's really not that long of a period of time. But that's not the point. The point is how far you can drive in those 5 seconds, which is the entire length of a football field when you're traveling at highway speeds. It's like doing it with your eyes closed. Trust the Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina urge you to stay safe behind the wheel. Don't text and drive. TrustTheChoice.com/GoHeels. TrustTheChoice.com/GoHeels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. That, of course, leads in to our five-second challenge. I've been researching this one now, Adam.
Okay.
Now, if you are not familiar with the five-second challenge, where have you been? Okay. I'm going to ask Adam a question. He will have 5 seconds to get as many of the answers as possible in the question. So there are multiple answers to the question. It's a list type of deal. So, Adam, our five-second challenge today focuses on ACC road contests. Now, as we know, as we discussed, Tar Heels have had trouble in Atlanta here as of late. So, Adam, there are, in addition to the Tar Heels, of course, 13 other teams that play ACC football, right?
Yes.
Adam, of those 13 teams, the Tar Heels have a 500 or better road record against 7 ACC teams. Adam, your 5 second challenge today is to name those ACC teams starting now.
Duke, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, Virginia, Syracuse.
Time. All right.
Are we only counting ACC games?
Oh, no, Adam. ACC, just all to away games.
Okay.
So it can, I'm against current ACC team members.
Right. But even games that were played when was not an
okay. I think you have to. Okay. I think in this new world of college football, you have to.
Right.
So you gave us Duke, Wake, Virginia, Pitt, and Syracuse.
Yes.
Adam, all 5 of those are correct.
Oh! Whoa!
So you got 5 of the 7.
Okay.
Can you name the other 2 just while you're thinking about
it? Okay, so I don't think Georgia Tech.
Nope, Georgia Tech is not one.
I wasn't sure about NC State.
Yes, NC State is one.
It is one.
Yes.
Wow, so all 3 of the other big 4.
Yes.
I bet Mac Brown likes that.
Yep. I bet Mac Brown played a large role in those numbers.
Florida State, no.
Nope.
Louisville, no.
Nope.
Boston College?
Yes. A grand total of 2 games Carolina's played at BC, but they're 1-1.
Yeah.
We were there the last time.
That's right.
Many moons ago, 09.
Right down the street from the trailer with the baseball trash.
That's right.
A fond memory.
So, Adam.
That was a good one, and I did well, so yeah. I like it for 2 reasons.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So, Adam got 5 of the 7. That was a pretty good performance there.
Yeah.
Nice work. Okay, Adam, your list?
Sure.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
This list started out as a little Sebastian list, but it grew.
You thought you had purchased a mini horse, but in reality, you had a full-blown mare.
Big news at the Smith Center this week. I think this happened because he's a big pod listener. We've seen J. Cole a lot this
week.
He's
been around a bunch.
Just even today when we were coming in to do the pod, J. Cole was out in the parking lot. He was like, hey, you guys going to talk about top rhymers in the game today? And we were like, not today. He's like, I'm not going to do it then.
Yep.
I think if we had said yes, I think he was going to come on.
Guys, can I come on and do an interview? We've got Matt Merletti. He talks about Osama bin Laden. I'm sorry.
You're not quite to that level. We respect you, but not quite there. So nice to see J. Cole around, and we just like to extend an invitation.
Anytime.
DaBaby, Lil Baby.
Yeah.
Any of the babies.
Yeah.
Run DMC, Grandmaster Flash. Any of those folks who want to come hang out at the Smith Center.
Which DJ is, Jazzy Jeff.
Or the Fresh Prince. Mobile Pod World Headquarters has become kind of the epicenter of the rap game,
yeah.
and it started to attract some stars,
yeah.
and we just want them all to feel welcome.
Yeah.
We need to remind people, get your bids in on the pod experience.
Last time I saw it, the bid had gone up.
Yeah.
$15.25.
It had been bumped up $25.
Yeah, a nice sensible dinner price.
Yeah. So, remember, it all benefits UNC Lineburger, which is a great cause. And the auction ends next week.
Yep, October 9th.
So don't think you're going to bid next week and then forget it.
It is Wednesday. Upcoming Wednesday, last day.
Imagine how heartbroken you would be if you didn't get to get your bid in.
Yeah.
Mac Brown, you may have heard of him.
I know Mac Brown.
He continues to do exactly the right thing all the time. I thought the letter he sent to fans on Thursday was perfect. And probably you got it if you listened to the pod. I think it went to ticket buyers and Rams Club members and probably students too. But he just talked about how 5 games into the season, Coach Brown found himself reflecting on how much fun it is to be the head coach of your football team.
That's great to say.
And as he thought about it, outside of the players and staff, the reason why it's so fun is because of the unbelievable support you're providing this football team. And then goes on to talk about the atmosphere at Keenan Stadium and hopes people come on the road with the Tar Heels the next 2 games, but then they'll see him back at Keenan for the Duke game on October 26th. And I just thought, good timing and the right words. And that's what you expect from Mac Brown.
You know, it really has been. The atmospheres in Keenan have been terrific. They really have been. And, I mean, that's not sugarcoating it. That's not blowing smoke. I think it absolutely has been a difference. That Duke game is sold out. The Virginia game is getting close. That could be a really big game. And I think if the Tar Heels can have a little bit of success here, I think that game will get sold out. The Mercer game will be harder to sell out, which is understandable. But I still think that it's a opportunity to see what could be, you know, a game that decides if Carolina goes to a bowl or not. You never know. And so it has made a difference. And Mac Brown multiple times said he thought the Miami game was the best atmosphere he had seen in Keenan. And then he said, you know, I think that Clemson game may have even been better. And so it has been spectacular in Keenan Stadium thus far.
I think the thing about the Mercer game is that's going to be your last chance to see Carolina football at Keenan in 2019.
Senior day, of course.
Yeah. So I think that game will be fun. I don't think we've talked about this. This feels like an oversight. Congratulations and a what up to Brennan Williams. The new color analyst on WWE Raw.
Yeah, well, you know, Brennan, of course, former offensive lineman for Carolina. He was a Butch Davis recruit. He played for Coach Davis, I think, and then definitely Coach Withers and Coach Fedora. And he always wanted to get into the wrestling business. I mean, that's just what he wanted to do. And I remember even when he was here, maybe he didn't play for Everett Withers. Maybe it was just Fedora on. Anyway, he always wanted to get into professional wrestling. He was a big professional wrestling fan. And he got into it to the point, I mean, he was an actual in-the-ring wrestler and got to what's called NXT, which is kind of this isn't going to be a great analogy, but it's almost like the AAA level of WWE. It's like you're right there. You're not quite to where they're putting you on their main stuff yet, and now NXT's gotten its own show. That's more information than anybody cares to hear about. There's a lot going on in wrestling TV right now. And part of that was WWE, which used to be known as WWF, switched up their announce teams, and they put – and Brennan Williams is now on. So, I mean, he's on 3 hours Monday night on USA on a show that's watched by millions of people. And so what a cool thing for him, living out his dream. He got to be in the ring some, and now he's keeping his career going in the business that he loves. And what a cool thing for him. And, in fact, we have – had discussions of trying to get Brennan on the pod and have come close, but the schedules just hadn't quite worked out. But that's definitely an interview we'd like to do if the timing is right.
Brennan played for Carolina from 2009 to 12.
Okay, so I was right the first time. It was Butch Davis, then Withers, and then his last year was with Coach Fedora in 2012.
Honorable mention, all ACC, yeah. His senior year.
Yeah, he was a good player. He at least was in the league, the NFL, for a little bit.
He got a shot with the Texans, the Jaguars, and the Patriots. He was on the practice squad.
Yeah.
So I saw this story, and it made me think of this. You remember those shirts, the T-shirts with the caricatures on them? I did that just for you.
Okay, a T-shirt with a caricature on it.
Right.
Of what?
Of like sports teams. Remember in like the late 80s, early 90s?
Yes,
and
yes.
Everybody had them.
I remember the Bulls one.
That's exactly the one I was going to say, which it turns out that all happened through Scott Williams. Big Scott, not little Scott.
Right.
He knew the company that produced them,
uh-huh.
and they gave him some money to wear one. And then the other Bulls were like, hey, I like that T-shirt. He's like, I can get you one. And then they wore them at their victory parade.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that's
that.
When they really got popular.
They took off.
So I felt like those T-shirts were kind of iconic to that era of sports.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a Carolina like fan gear item that you think of like 80s, 90s, that if you had this, basically you had to have this to be a Tar Heel fan. And if you saw somebody rocking this thing, then you're like, that person's legit.
Well, you could always go Carolina starter jacket.
That's what I was going to say.
I think that's probably, at least from where you and I were in life at that point in time, which is
right.
like middle school-ish time period.
Yeah.
I definitely think the starter jacket.
That's what I
had the
too.
One. Did you have the one? Did you have one?
Oh, yeah.
Did you have the one that said Carolina on the back? I had the one that had the Rams head on the back, like the Ramsey's head.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
No, mine just said Carolina on the front,
uh-huh.
but I don't think it had anything on
Didn't
the back.
Didn't have anything on the back?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Those
starter
were cool.
Starter jackets, man. Those were hot in the streets.
I'm fairly confident that I may still have mine, and I don't want to give away again the farm, but I'm going to be seen in some hot jackets in the near future.
Let me just tell you, coming up in a future interview, you were so excited. I can't wait for people to hear it.
So, I don't. Can people think of anything else that was an iconic piece of Carolina gear? I think the angry ram head, to me, like that's not one piece of gear, but that
right.
logo,
yeah.
to me, is like that time.
Yeah.
As I expected.
Wow, this list is really, you're right. This is a wide-ranging list.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. As I expected, we got a lot of commentary about roundabouts. I knew when I brought it up.
Dude, you, Adam, got put in your place.
Some people agreed. And by some people, I mean Mary M. on Twitter.
Yeah.
She said there is a road in Fayetteville that has three roundabouts, and she avoids it.
Hmm.
What up to you, Mary M. on Twitter? And I also think, so Born Bred Dead on Twitter is from Randleman, which, as we know, has three roundabouts in about a quarter mile, right outside of Randleman High School,
yep.
home of the Tigers, on Tiger Den Road.
Hmm.
And she said that the roundabouts are important because of morning and evening traffic outside the school. I don't know that you're going to persuade me that Randleman High School has more traffic than any other high school. Why do they need the roundabouts? But, as I expected, we got an email from a town planner, which I knew was coming when I brought it up. And he's going to try to throw some facts down and things about studies that somehow trump my feelings.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it was Reed Hugerich.
Yeah. Reed brought the heat with this email.
He's got a master's degree in city and regional planning. As if anyone's impressed or thinks that's some kind of credential you should listen to over a podcast guy who was at Randleman, North Carolina at 6:45 in the morning. But whatever. Actually, Reed's email is very nice.
Yes.
I figured I'd write in to offer my services as your pseudo-professional transportation guy.
Well, he's our pod city planner guy now.
Yeah, he's director of city planning.
Yeah.
Yeah. While I've never been a town planner in Randleman, and if he was, he'd probably do it differently. That's my editorial comment. I was a transportation planner in, this is a good credential, Apex.
Yeah.
And that all turned out fine.
Yeah.
For 7 years before moving to Ithaca, Reed says, # how can you justify that, to do transportation work for Cornell. Roundabouts offer a ton of benefits over traditional intersections, such as stop signs and traffic signals. Roundabouts are much safer because they make drivers slow down as they enter the intersection. Wouldn't you slow down for a stop sign?
Yes.
Okay. As a result, it is easier to avoid crashes, and the crashes that do occur are mostly low-speed side swipes or rear endings, both of which are much safer than broadside T-bone crashes that occur at traditional intersections.
I have to say, that makes sense.
That's a reasonable point. Where at a signalized intersection, I'm going to start calling them that, a driver may speed up to beat a red light and therefore be going faster when a collision may occur, drivers must slow down at roundabouts. The other benefit is that there is less waiting. Imagine, Adam, if you had been sitting at a red light at 6:45 on a Sunday morning waiting for the traffic that isn't coming. With a roundabout, you don't even have to stop. Despite slowing vehicle speeds, roundabouts, especially when used in series, like in Randleman, it was a roundabout series, actually reduce the amount of time it takes to drive through a corridor because of the reduction in wait time. Reed says, I won't even get into the fact that roundabouts reduce vehicle emissions and noise pollution.
Joke's on you, Reed. Adam doesn't stop for red lights.
Well, those are all some fine words to say.
A very reasoned response.
I believe that if you timed me going past Randleman High School with no roundabouts, I would make it faster than in the 3 roundabout series.
Sounds like we're going to have to go to Randleman, Adam. There's only one way to decide this.
It's always really frustrating when you develop thoughts. Like, I imagine this must be how people feel about sports coaches. You develop your opinion on something based on your obvious intelligence and observations. And then some guy who's actually done the work and earned the degrees comes in with his quote-unquote facts and quote-unquote studies and explains to you why what you foolishly believed was wrong. I mean, I know they need to call timeouts. That fixes everything. We also got a listener submitted, how can you justify that?
Oh, I haven't seen this.
Well, I can tell that this person feels so strongly about this, even though it's a little unusual, that I think we need to read it. Because I think John Parker is really upset.
All right.
John's how can you justify that is as follows. John writes, hey, bros, I have a how can you justify that completely unrelated to Tar Heel activities. I recently watched a few episodes of Ken Burns' country music documentary.
Hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that's good.
I've watched 2 episodes of the, I think, 8, and in all honesty, I don't know a lot about what's covered in the first 2.
Right.
But I feel like we're getting somewhere. John says it's excellent. Watch it if you can. But during the Reba McEntire section, spoiler alert, there was no ref, let alone a clip of Fancy.
Well, it at least has a reference to the pod. We've talked about Fancy on the pod before.
Sure, yeah. John says Fancy is probably her signature
Fancy
hit.
Fancy was my name.
Unacceptable. John's aunt, the one you may remember, had the crush on Dante Calabria.
I remember that.
Also gave me my first ever cassette, which included, of course, Fancy by Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
I don't know. John's getting worked up now. I don't know how you can tell the story of country music from the late 80s and early 90s without Fancy being her name. Oh, no, being center stage. Its absence in the documentary soured my watching experience for a while, which might also make this an I don't even want this.
Yeah, I think it's more an I don't even want this. He did want the country music documentary. He didn't want the fact that Fancy was left out. I don't even want this documentary anymore.
I could just feel John's furor building in that email.
I have to admit, I don't have a super strong opinion on this. Other than to say, Fancy is a good song.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So I think it's worth getting worked up about. And Ken Burns, I know you're listening.
Ken Burns, you need to check yourself.
In the director's cut of your 8-episode, 16-hour documentary, you need to go back and add about 3.5 minutes. And it's a young lady named Reba McEntire, who, by the way, fun story about Reba McEntire. I saw this on the internet just the other day. I just thought of it. She sent her plane to pick up the family of Conway Twitty when Conway had fallen ill and was in his final days. And she sent her plane to pick up the family, flew them to wherever Conway Twitty was, They got to say goodbye to Conway Twitty. They asked her how much they owed her. She said, absolutely nothing.
Reba McEntire, my friend, you are so hashtag so classy. You know, I might have been born just plain white trash, but thanks, you were so my
main. She said, here's your one chance, fancy, don't let me die. Adam, do you have anything else?
No.
I have two things, and then I do want to mention basketball quickly. And in fact, one of my things has to do with basketball. A little what up to Kendall Marshall. Director of recruiting just named that for Carolina, which, as explained by Coach Williams, is still an evolving role. And what it really means, it's not like Kendall is going out and watching prospects. He can't do that. It's more helping, along with Sean May and some others, Eric Hoots, to rethink in the way that Carolina, I think, presents itself on social media and some other things in recruiting. And, Adam, it seems to be going well.
I think he's doing a good job.
We would love to talk to Kendall about it. We have been unable to secure that interview. We will continue to try.
Kendall.
Fancy was her name.
Maybe we could talk to someone else about their recruiting game.
Maybe. Adam, I want to just throw this thing in quickly before we talk about basketball. And we don't have a ton about a basketball to talk about, but just want to mention it. So in the new offices that buttress Pod World headquarters, we have the new fancy water fountains.
What's her name?
That, you know how you can put your cup up and it's got the sensor and it gives you the water. So you're not like pressing the button. And then it tells you how many water bottles you have saved by doing this.
Right.
Adam, what a rush it is to see the the number go up on the water bottle saved thing. Like, and every now and then you'll get two. Mm. Like, it'll knock out two. I don't know what the measure. I'm guessing they're going off 12 ounces. I don't know that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 16.9. But when you do it and you go from, like, 900 to 932 in one sequence, dude, it is – the adrenaline is flowing through you.
You went from 900 to 932?
Or excuse me, 930 to 932.
Did you fill up like, did you fill up like a recycling bin?
Let me get this giant jug over here.
I'm thirsty, guys.
I meant 930 to 932. But here's the other thing, and I'm so upset I missed it. Hmm. We had gotten to 993, I think.
Ooh.
And I had to leave, and when by the time I had gotten back the next day, it was already over 1,000. I want to be there for like one of the key markers. Like if I get the 5,000th water bottle saved, I may call it a day.
Why did you leave with it sitting at 993?
Family obligations or something.
Couldn't you have filled up like your backpack
kids.
Or something before you left?
Sorry, kids.
I'm sitting on 997, guys. I'm not going to be there.
I think we all understand I need to wait for this water bottle filler to get 1,000.
Daddy's impressed that you made the honor roll or whatever, but we're sitting on 998. Have you ever had the reverse experience where you have a smaller container and you don't get plus
don't get
one?
Any? I think one time, like I didn't have to fill up my whole thing. I only filled it up a little bit, and I didn't get one. And it really is you lose some satisfaction.
I think when that happens, you have to go ahead and drink some and then hit it again.
Like at the Coke machine when you're trying to get a little extra right before you go?
Yeah, at the freestyle.
Yeah, oh yeah. What a thrill, though, Adam. It really is. And there's going to – and little side note, when we get into brand-new Pod World headquarters, there's one – right around the corner. We can just make that our own.
Maybe we could hit a round number right before we pod.
Yeah.
That would be like the equivalent of on-fire podding.
Dress, look good, play good.
Yeah.
That's what we're feeling. Adam, quickly, basketball. Tar Heels did have media day earlier this week. It was on Wednesday. I don't know if any major storylines came out of there other than, unfortunately, Sterling Manley has not been doing any work with the Tar Heels due to some health issues with his knee, and so that is slowing him down, which I think is troublesome for the Tar Heels due to depth in the front court. I think you feel probably very good about where you are when your starter's up there, but don't know about the depth behind it. I think it just reinforced yet again something we've talked about, all the new faces, and I think how important those two graduate transfers are going to be. I mean, Christian Keeling and Justin Pierce are needed on this team and are needed to produce, not just be guys that they're going to need to produce for the Tar Heels to be good. Roy Williams, very positive about Cole Anthony and about his attitude, about his game, about the way that he has approached things so far, which I think is exciting to hear. And so some more steps on the journey have been taken here from Carolina and really starting to get in some praxis now as they try to get ready for the exhibition game and then, of course, the season opener, which is in about a month from now.
Notre Dame is not as bad as you remember them being last year.
Well, no, they got Pfluger back, right?
They got all five starters back.
Yeah. And they had, and Pfluger has returned. He had an ACL injury last year. So, no, it's a veteran team. They're going to be good. Is Mooney still there?
Yeah. All five starters are back. I think so.
Look, Jones, I told you all five starters
Maybe
are back.
Maybe you didn't hear me that I gave you my one Notre Dame nugget. All five starters are back. I think one piece of news that came out of Media Day is the freshmen got to talk.
Yep.
First time ever for Carolina basketball. The freshmen talked before their first game. You talked about the post-depth. Tiny practice nugget. I know there's a lot of talk about Cole Anthony. I think Armando Bacot is good.
Oh, yeah.
I think he is in much better shape than you are used to from a freshman big guy. They usually struggle playing at the pace Roy Williams wants them to play until they kind of internalize the idea, I have to run all the time. I think Armando Bacot is capable of running all the time. And the practices we've seen, he looks like he's okay playing close to the basket. He doesn't want to go out and shoot 17-footers, which is good because Carolina doesn't need him to do that. I think he's not Cole Anthony, but he is going to be important, and not the least of which reasons is Carolina's got a lack of depth in there. Someone who is big other than Garrison Brooks and Armando Bacot is going to have to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Sterling Manley's got some work to do to get healthy, to be that person, which leaves you wondering, Brandon Huffman, Walker Miller, do you go smaller and maybe use a Justin Pierce who was successful rebounding at William & Mary? This is a different type of rebounding. There's been a couple times – Carolina's only practiced, as you're hearing this, five times. There's been a couple times in the early practices where Roy Williams has really emphasized to Justin Pierce, we need you going to the boards. And that's not just defensively, it's also offensively, because as we know, nobody goes to the boards like Carolina does offensively. Been a few times where Justin Pierce has shot a perimeter shot and then just kind of stood around or even backed up. Coach Williams has told him, we need you going to the glass. And if Carolina is going to play smaller, they will need him to do that.
So underway, good to see all the guys. Saw a little gerb. We gave each other a little head nod. Looking forward to talking a little gerb again here soon.
I saw a little gerb's mom at late night.
Oh.
And I really wanted to get the lowdown on Mr. Pickle.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like the timing was right.
Well, it won the right place and time.
And I feel like we're going to see her a lot more over the course of the season. So my promise to you as a professional journalist is that I'll talk to her and get to the bottom of that Mr. Pickle situation.
Thank you, sir, for being brave enough to step up.
We all serve in our own way, and that's mine.
Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay, Carolina and Georgia Tech coming up on Saturday. It is 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. A little bit of a different game time. We'll be on the air at 3 p.m., and looking forward to that. But for now, we will let Matt Merletti. And as a special bonus, we're going to let Matt Merletti's alter ego from his prank phone calls, Rusty Williamson. So we're going to let Matt and Rusty, and of course the RZA, get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Matt Merletti.
See you later, Big Grits.
All righty, this is Rusty Williamson. See you later there, Big Grits.
When I was small, nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.